Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pop That Mama podcast. In this episode, we have Hannah, who is a doula, mother, and childbirth educator, coming on the podcast to talk to us about how to avoid an unnecessary cesarean. I know I am personally very keen to learn some tips from her and to talk about this as I embark on preparing for the birth of our second baby. So I'm really excited to have you here, Hannah. Why don't you tell us who you are and what makes you passionate about this specific topic?
Yeah, so like you said, my name is Hannah Gill. I'm a doula and childbirth educator, and I actually got into birth work after the traumatic birth of my son with my first. So I had an unnecessary cesarean. It ended up being extremely traumatic. And then I went on to have a VBAC with my daughter, so my second birth. And I feel like if I would have been more aware and prepared the first time around, I could have potentially prevented that first cesarean, which would have opened up my birth options for my second child a little bit more. So I just feel like this is an extremely important topic to cover, especially for first-time moms, not just for VBAC moms.
And is that because you look at back on the first birth and you can identify, you know, perhaps different decisions, or what was it? Because that sounds like a lot of kind of, I guess, responsibility to put on yourself. But how did you come to that conclusion?
So it was my first birth. I was not very prepared, I guess. I thought I was prepared. I birthed at a hospital. I didn't know about any other birthing options in my area. I had never heard of a birth center, and I knew people who gave birth at home, but I just thought that was something that not that many people did. So I took a childbirth education class at the hospital that I went to, and that was all I really did to prepare, was take that class. I didn't know much else. I didn't know what a doula was. I wanted to go unmedicated for my birth, but I took just the basic class. I didn't do much to prepare for that. So going into the birth, I just did kind of what everyone does, mainstream birth, and just went with the flow, did what my doctors and nurses told me to do, and thought that was that. So looking back, like, there were some major differences that I would have done, different choices I would have made to kind of change the path. And you don't know how it's going to end up either way, but I would have just done things a lot differently, which I did do differently in my second birth. So
such a common story, isn't it?
Much too common.
Much too common. It's always, for me, when I work with mums, it's either I had a really awful birth and I'm determined to make it different. And then you get the people, obviously, that are like, right, I want to learn everything. And they almost like study as though it's like, you know, a big sort of exam or something. But we do hear the wing it approach, wait and see, put it off until the last minute. Okay, well, I mean, this is a big topic. Let's try to think where to even begin. What is an unnecessary cesarean, and how do you know if you've had one?
Yeah, so for me, I knew that I had one, because if it's an emergency and there's an issue, there's usually a medical indication that you need the cesarean. So the big ones are if you have a transverse baby that's not in position, if you have a complete placenta previa where your placenta is completely covering your cervix, those are clearly reasons where you have to have a cesarean, and a vaginal birth is not an option. And there's also instances in the middle of labor, say baby's heart is decelerating, but it's not coming back up. It keeps decelerating lower than normal, and it's taking forever to come back up, or it doesn't come back up at all. Or there's rare instances where there's like medical complications with the mother or the baby where an emergency cesarean, which would be necessary, is needed. Mine was not really one of those. Mine was definitely an unnecessary one that could have been potentially prevented. My baby and I were stable. There were no medical complications. I had just been pushing for 4 hours. He was asynclitic, and I opted for a C-section. I had an epidural. I was pushing on my back. So there wasn't an emergency there. It was just an unplanned, unscheduled cesarean, but not something where we need to get this baby out now. You and your baby are at risk. So that's how you know, like, the big difference between this is unnecessary and this is definitely necessary C-section, is if there's that emergent factor where there's an issue with you or the baby.
Yeah, definitely. And there's definitely also room for like nuance, isn't there, where you look back and you think, you know, perhaps it was unnecessary, but perhaps it wasn't, and we can't really know, especially with those heart rate decels, you know. Baby,
and at that point, usually at the time you get a C-section, like, at that point, it's going to be necessary. If you're opting for a C-section, if you've ran out of other options and you've exhausted all things, at that point, it's going to be necessary. But if you're doing things ahead of time to eventually prevent that from happening and taking those steps, that's when you know, like, this could have been an unnecessary thing.
Yeah. I always think to myself, you know, it's the unnecessary interventions that we want to avoid. But when we truly need an intervention, mm-hmm. that's when we'll be hopefully saying, okay, well, thank goodness I had one.
Right.
But so how would you like to tackle this big subject of avoiding unnecessary cesarean?
So the way I look at it, and I didn't realize this until I had had my VBAC myself, the way that women are preparing for VBAC, our goal is to not have a C-section. So we're wanting to prevent that unnecessary C-section. But this is the way that all women should be preparing for birth, because the goal, I mean, unless you have a necessary reason to have a C-section, is you don't want to have a C-section more often than not. So really, you can just dive into the preparation ahead of time is like the first thing, just where you're choosing to birth, who you're choosing to birth with. And even if you only have one choice of a hospital in your area, pick your provider wisely, look at their C-section rates, those type of things. So really setting yourself up logistically in where you're birthing and your birthing environment, because that's going to play a key role in how your birth turns out. So that's the first thing. I think
that's one of the biggest ones, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. you could go into one hospital doors that has a cesarean rate of 60% and the other one has mm-hmm. 20%, and that will directly affect you.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's a huge decision, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And it's the culture in that hospital is it's primarily C-sections, especially if it's a hospital where a lot of high-risk patients go. So not just within the hospital, but within the practice that you're seeing, choose your OB or your midwife or whatever provider you're with wisely, have conversations with them ahead of time. And if they don't seem aligned with your birth wants and desires, then switch providers if possible.
And what else can we be doing to try and prevent those unnecessary cesareans?
So I think not just education, but education is a huge one, but knowing how to take action and implement the education that you're absorbing. We hear a lot that knowledge is power, but if you're not acting on that knowledge, it's just kind of there. So taking a childbirth education class is a good thing, but make sure you're taking one that, again, is aligned with the birth you want. And then knowing how to actually implement what you're learning. So if you're learning about interventions, then decide, okay, here are the possible interventions. Here's what I would want to do in those certain scenarios. Here's how I'm actually going to take action in the time and place when labor is happening to make sure it goes, I can choose what I want to choose type of thing. So you can take your childbirth education class, but if you get to labor and you just completely forget what all you learned, it's not going to be very helpful. So just knowing how to actually put those into action at the time of labor.
And are there any decisions like whether or not you want, you know, you accept an epidural, you ask for an epidural? What are those key decisions that people might not know that they are increasing the chances of them needing a cesarean through those decisions that they make, because they might not be so clear at the time? What are the things that actually do increase the chances?
Yeah, so I say with any birth, whether it be your first or your 10th, avoid unnecessary interventions if they're not absolutely needed. All interventions are tools to be used when they're needed. And if you can avoid them for a longer period of time, I mean, your chances are going to go up. So I like to say, like, an epidural is a tool to be used if you're not coping well, if your body is not relaxing, if you're tense, because that could be slowing down your labor because you're so tense. So there are times where an epidural will help you progress better. But even if you do get those interventions, especially an epidural, knowing that with an epidural, you can push in different positions. I didn't know that with my epidural. My epidural was so strong, I pushed on my back. I had no idea. My nurses didn't tell me I could push in varying positions. And then if possible, avoid an induction if you don't need it. Don't go for an elective induction unless it's like a medical necessity. The majority of providers now are offering elective inductions at 39 weeks for everybody. And that may not be what you need. I know a lot of people get uncomfortable.
Is it like that in the US now?
Oh, yes. So
because 39 weeks.
Yes, because of the ARRIVE trial, which was a big study that was done, the majority of OBs are offering induction at 39 weeks across the board to everybody. They're not forcing it, but they're saying, like, giving birth and inducing at 39 weeks can decrease your risk of C-section. But there is a lot of back and forth on that study and that trial on how accurate it is.
Yeah, I thought it was debunked.
First-time mothers. Yeah, it only includes first-time mothers. And there's a lot of back and forth with it. But most providers in the hospital now are offering elective induction at 39 weeks to everybody.
That's terrible because so many women are going into those conversations not informed of the risks. Mm-hmm. And they will just point blank think, this is what the healthcare professional is recommending, and so I'm going to believe them, right? There's a lot mm-hmm. of people that will do that and will walk yes. that path of potentially having many interventions, and it will come out, and then, you know, if they choose to have another child, we'll go the other way. Like we see mm-hmm. the story play out so much, isn't it? And then I sometimes I'm like, you know, how much, like, what can we do to warn yeah. people without scaring? But yeah, gosh, that's shocking. 39 weeks is so early as well, because imagine the baby wants to come into this world at 42 plus five and you're right. taking them out at 39 weeks. Don't tell me that they're just hanging out in the womb doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. And even if it is like a necessary medical induction, women need to be counseled on what an induction looks like, because many are not saying that, like, induction can be a long drawn out process, because if your body's not ready, you're forcing it into labor. So it's not going to be as smooth and quick generally as if you were to go into labor when your body is ready. And most women are not counseled on how long an induction can take, how hard it will be, the risks that come along with it, with the use of Pitocin, and what that looks like. So even if it is medically necessary, they need to be educated on what that looks like for them.
It seems that the risks of not accepting the induction are always, you know, shared, but the risks mm-hmm. of accepting right. the induction aren't always mm-hmm. shared.
And when you're uncomfortable at the end of pregnancy, you're just probably like, get this baby out. Sure, let's do it.
It's a little, you know, get out.
It's a mind game. Yeah.
That's the thing. You've got women who are frustrated, big, heavy, and then they've got that thing that induction's there if you want it. We've planted mm-hmm. the seed at 39 weeks. And then the agitation builds and builds. We know first-time mothers tend to go over 41 weeks. And you can imagine how long those mm-hmm. weeks from, you know, feel. And then, of course, you end up probably accepting it because it's just there and it sounds easy.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. So where you give birth massively affects your outcomes, thinking about the education journey and then mm-hmm. thinking about those decisions and those choices you make, which might increase the chances of more intervention. And I love what you say, which is to try and avoid any intervention for as long as possible. And that's great advice, because often they come as packages, don't they? They come with mm-hmm. a potential cascade, because they tend to have, there's always a cause, you know, an effect, mm-hmm. and there's always the something that happens afterwards as a byproduct of that intervention.
Mm-hmm. Even something as small as a cervical check during pregnancy. Yeah. I mean, that's an intervention that I've seen so many as a doula, and then just talking to women in general, people get discouraged when they get those cervical checks because, I'm 38 weeks and I'm not dilated yet.
Yeah.
It's okay to not be dilated at 38 weeks. It doesn't mean anything about when you're going to go into labor. So even those small interventions that seem minuscule and like they don't have a big risk or impact, they really do.
Yeah, I was just literally recording a podcast with another mum who had a sweep. She didn't consent to it, and it just started a cascade of like bleeding, mm-hmm. waters breaking, and then a labor that was just like really, really fast. And then, you know, anyway, that episode's coming out, but you just don't realize that thing that's offered as a kind of cup of tea, maybe, mm-hmm. or something as light as like, oh, would you like a sweep at 38 mm-hmm. weeks, is something that could actually cause a cascade. Right. Of interventions, because if your waters break but contractions don't start, well,
then you're on a time clock.
There's only one way to get the baby out in that case. So it's those small decisions that feel small as well that can raise the risk.
Mm-hmm.
So what other ways can one go about avoiding?
So another big one, I think, it's not just you yourself being knowledgeable and about what you want and your options, but anyone that's going to be in your birth environment with you. So whether that be your partner or friend or your doula or whoever you have with you, make sure they know what you're wanting out of your birth and that you're wanting to avoid these unnecessary interventions. And they have the language and the ability to advocate for that if you are not able to, because it's important to know how to self-advocate. But when you're in labor and you're vulnerable and you're exhausted, you may not be in the mental space to self-advocate. So having your birth team be able to do that for you and talk to the providers, if you're not able to, especially your partner, and say like, wait, can we have a minute? We didn't want this XYZ intervention. Can we have a time to discuss it? So making sure that not you, you're only educated, but that your birth team is educated on all of the options and what you're wanting as well, because they are a big support for you in that space.
Definitely. I always talk about, yeah, the importance of having that birth partner who has a voice and knows what you want. So yeah, having an emergency cesarean is one of my biggest fears, and I'm pregnant right now, and it's something that I've been like trying to work on. And the way that I look at it right now is that I know that the decisions I'm making during my pregnancy are going to put me in a position where I'm more likely to avoid having an unnecessary one. And I now need to make peace with, if I need one, at least I can say, well, look, I really tried not to have one. If I need one, it was so. There's going to be lots of people who will listen to this podcast, who will take on board what we have to say, and who will try their best to avoid an unnecessary cesarean, but will end up having a cesarean. So how do we ensure that we still have an experience that is positive? Looking back on your first birth, is there anything that you could have done with your mindset? And I just don't want people to kind of walk away and go, oh gosh, I've got to, you know, do all these things to avoid a cesarean, and then they have the cesarean, because a portion of people will, a lot, possibly me, you know. And I don't want people to feel like disheartened and as though they might have, you know, failed at something. Yeah. Exactly. So so what is it in that moment? Because obviously what we're doing is we're trying to actively avoid something. So if we then walk into the experience that we were trying to avoid, there's of course going to be an discomfort and perhaps sadness. So what tools can we give people in that moment to shift it, or before, to shift it into something that is hopefully positive?
Right. So for me, with my first birth, what was so hard, especially mentally and emotionally for me, was that during my pregnancy and leading up to the birth, C-section was not even on my radar. I didn't even think it was a possibility for me. I didn't know what it would look like if I had one. It just wasn't something I thought about, and I wasn't prepared for it. So when it came down to having that choice of, do we have the C-section? I felt blindsided. I felt shocked. Like, I don't understand why this is happening to me. It's not an emergency. Like, what is happening? So I think preparing ahead of time, and I have all my doula clients not only make a birth plan for a vaginal birth, but make a birth plan for a C-section if it's needed, because you can make it a better experience if you're, as long as it's not something where it's like a crash and it's like true emergency, get this baby out in minutes. You can make it more comfortable for yourself, even if it's needed. So there's ways to make the C-section not just physically better, but emotionally and mentally better. So knowing that you can have music playing if you need to, or you don't have to have your arms strapped down. Maybe you can have your doula back there with you, skin to skin in the OR. Those types of things can make a C-section just more peaceful for the family. But just knowing ahead of time what you would want in those circumstances, so you know that if this is necessary, here's how I want this birth to look.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm still asking that question. How can an experience that you actively so badly wanted to avoid still be positive in the moment? I'm really struggling with this myself, is that I do not want this. And so yes, I know I can have the fairy lights. I know it can make it amazing. I know, but I don't want it. So how on earth am I going to deal with it in the moment? And I mean, I can preach this stuff to my clients. I want to hear it from you. I know what the answers are, but I kind of want to...
So for me, when I was going for my VBAC, of course I wanted to avoid that C-section, but I knew in the end, if I had to have it, it would be because I tried everything in my power. I did everything I could. I'd left no stone unturned. And at the end, it would be my decision. It'd be what is best for me and my baby. I wouldn't be fear-mongered. I wouldn't be coerced. It would be because this needs to happen. At this point, it is necessary. And I did everything I could to prevent this. but it's still something that's this need at this point, this is needed. And this is the best choice for me and my baby. And as long as you're supported in those decisions that you're making and you're not being, like I said, coerced into it, no one's trying to get you to do it if you don't want it and it's not necessary. So at that point, if you've done everything in your power, then that point it's truly necessary at that point.
Yeah. And I guess it is just about surrender, you know.
Yeah, surrender and birth across the board is such an important thing.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be, it's not like it's going to be beautiful and you're going to love it. It could be still hard for you to deal with, but knowing that you did what you needed to do and you knew all of your options and you made the best decision with the information you had at the time and what felt good to you, then you're not, it's not like you failed or you're to blame for it. And that, it's just a different turn of events that just unfolded. And it's not your fault, it's not your baby's fault. And it's still going to be difficult, but probably not as difficult as if you felt like you weren't educated or you would have made different decisions or whatever that looks like. So
just thinking of one of my friends who loved her cesarean, and I've spoken to her about my fears, and she just said, Poppy, like, it's really it's, you know, you don't feel any pain in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's relatively quick. Like, she really enjoyed having the morphine afterwards as well. She mm-hmm. quite enjoys those high feelings. She said it reminded her of back at uni.
And it's going to be different for everybody. Like, some people,
but
I've had friends.
What is that makes it different for her and me? It's mindset, isn't it?
Yeah, it has to be mindset and what you picture your birth looking like. So, like, for people who have C-sections and they love them and they continue to get repeat C-sections, maybe they just, that's how they wanted their birth to look. And maybe they like that sense of scheduling and sense of control and sense of having everything just be very structured versus the unpredictability of natural labor. And even, like, I like to tell people, C-sections can be unpredictable too. Even scheduled C-sections aren't going to be like picture perfect. They're a surgery after all. So it has to be mindset and just how you picture your birth and what you're going to be at peace with, and not being so rigid in how your birth plan looks that you set yourself up for disappointment almost.
That's it. That's the key, isn't it? Not being fixated on one plan. I just finished writing my plan A, B, and C, and I actually found just writing down what I want if I need a cesarean was super helpful, because it just it made me realize that there are lots of elements still in my control. And maybe there's also something to be said for sitting with those feelings of sadness and mourning what you didn't have. And actually, it's okay. It's not about saying, well, if I'm gonna have that cesarean, I'm gonna pretend or say that I'm gonna still be empowered and positive. If there's gonna be sadness there, maybe it's just about allowing space for that and then moving forth with the,
because it's okay to mourn the birth you wanted and that you didn't get to have for a long time. Like, I don't look back on my C-section even now. I'm not like, oh, I'm so happy I had that C-section. I'm so happy my son's here. I'm not happy about how it turned out, but doing like that birth processing and fear release, I went to therapy and that was extremely helpful. So just knowing that it's okay to feel sad, it's okay to feel upset if it ends up in an outcome you didn't want. There's even women who have vaginal births that are traumatic and they didn't want them to turn out how they did. So just knowing that it's okay to have those feelings and you're not abnormal for having those feelings, you can still be grateful for your baby being here, but not exactly grateful or appreciative for how they arrived into the world.
Yeah. Let's talk about VBAC. So vaginal birth after cesarean, I know you're quite passionate about this for obvious reasons. But a lot of people are told that it's not the safest way to give birth, and they're kind of given the risks, and these risks overshadow them over pregnancy. So talk to us about vaginal birth after cesarean and perhaps some of the challenges that people might come up against.
Yeah, so this is a big one. Obviously, preventing the C-section so a VBAC isn't necessary is the first goal. But if a VBAC is, or if you have a C-section, VBAC is an option for the vast majority of women who have had a C-section. And most women don't even realize it's an option for them because they're not counseled about it. They're not informed about it. I think the VBAC rate, at least in the US, so the amount of women that are actually going on to choose a VBAC versus a scheduled cesarean is about 14%. So it's very low. It has been higher at times, but it's low at this point. And I think it's increasing, but not as much as I would like it to.
Do we know why?
I don't really know. There's not really one reason why. I think one is that women don't realize it's an option at all. Maybe they don't even know what a VBAC is. And they just think, oh, once a C-section, always a C-section. The second, I think, is a lack of supportive providers. So like you said, there's providers that are saying it's too risky. We're not going to support that. We only support a scheduled C-section after this point. So not being able to find a provider that is supportive is a big discouragement for a lot of women, because they feel like, well, if this doctor is not supporting it, like, how am I even supposed to get this? Or they don't realize that switching providers is an option. And then I also think there's a big illusion of control with a scheduled C-section. And there is some sense of control. I mean, you can schedule it, but our bodies do what they want to do. And you could go into labor before your scheduled C-section. And then all the plans you made surrounding that scheduled date just go out the window. So there is a big illusion and a sense of control with that scheduled C-section that's a repeat, because that first birth could have been extremely traumatic and they felt out of control of their birth. So now they're saying, okay, I want to have control of this situation and just know what the outcome is going to be. So as another thing about VBAC, here in the US especially, and in my local area, I just want to spread awareness that it is an option, and 80 to 90% of women that have C-sections are good candidates for VBAC. And yeah, there's risks to VBAC with the uterine rupture risk, but it's relatively low risk. And if you're trying to decide between a VBAC and a repeat C-section, make sure your doctor's also talking to you about the risks of repeat C-sections and what you want your family to look like. Because if you want to have 5 to 6 children, you need to know the risks with having 5 to 6 cesareans. So make sure you're being counseled on the risks on both sides for all those birth options.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that I'm always surprised people don't know about, is the the risks after. So if people are listening and they would like to work with you, do you teach any courses, or are you predominantly doing your doula work?
Yeah, so I am in the process of releasing my VBAC prep courses for parents, but also I have a VBAC doula training program for doulas that want to learn more about VBAC. If they want to be in a VBAC specific niche or only support VBACs, they have that as well. And you can find all of that on my website, my Instagram. All of those are The Hannah Gill. I recently changed my branding. So thehannahgill.com and on Instagram at thehannahgill.
Amazing. And I actually, I was looking at your Instagram just before we spoke, so I will put your Instagram in the show notes.
Yeah. So the one thing I want to say just for everyone listening is just know what your options are and what you want in certain circumstances. That's going to be the biggest thing. And then knowing how to advocate for what you want. And it's unfortunate to have to fight for the birth that you want, but there are instances where it's going to be necessary for you to advocate and speak up for what you want. And just know that your provider is working for you. You're not working for them.
Yeah.
And that you are able and willing to advocate for what you're wanting.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Hannah. And I'll leave all of your website details and things in the show notes.
Thank you so much.